I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
The Indianapolis Colts get a big win over the Houston Texans in the wild card round of the NFL playoffs. I'm looking right out my window at the stadium where it took place last night, and joining me to talk about that, and we'll mix in some other things as well, with Greg Doyle of the Indianapolis Star. You can get him on Twitter, at Greg Doyle, D-O-Y-E-L, Star, on Twitter. Greg, good to have you on the show, man. How are you? Happy New Year.
I'm good. Happy New Year to you, Sean. If you're looking at the stadium where it happened, you probably noticed some liquid on that stadium. That's where the Colts lifted their leg and peed all over that place. They've made Energy Stadium theirs this year, haven't they?
No doubt. In the last month, absolutely, Greg. And I'll tell you what, I do the pregame and the postgame for the Texans, and I think to me the overriding theme following the game last night was certainly losing that game and being knocked out for the 2018 postseason. But, man, this is a Colts team that, if you're a fan of any team in the AFC South right now, you got to be really scared about what Chris Ballard has built there in Indianapolis.
Yeah, and what Frank Reich is coaching. You know, the teamwork, they're perfect together. And it's kind of shocking, really, for those of us really close to it here in Indianapolis. We're shocked how fast this thing has come together. And the first couple of games it was happening, and, okay, it's happening. This might be a fluke. I don't know, but as it's been happening, it's very clear this is real. This is legit, sustainable. This isn't just some kind of a weird season where next year they'll regress to the mean. No, this team's coming. This franchise is coming. And Ballard's, what I can't figure out really is, and I realize there's a lot of competition. Nothing's in a vacuum. So I really don't know what else is out there. But I can't figure out which guy's more deserving of the award. Ballard is the GM of the year. Reich is the coach of the year. Luck is the comeback player of the year. And maybe all three.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. In the previous segment, we had a caller call in talking about Frank Reich and Coach of the Year. My own opinion, I think Ballard has a better shot at Executive of the Year than Reich does for Coach of the Year, just because I think it's probably a pretty crowded field for Coach of the Year. And that the look for Chris Ballard, and I know the balloting was probably done before, maybe kind of in conjunction with the All-Pro balloting getting submitted, but getting two rookies on the first team All-Pro, I mean, has that ever happened with an executive before?
Well, it has happened before. The last time that happened, two rookies, all pro, from the same draft class. 1965, and listen to these names. These are crazy names. It was the Chicago Bears, and the rookies were Gale Sayers and Dick Butkus. Right? And that's pretty good. That's pretty good. Yeah. So not that means, well, obviously Leonard and Quentin Nelson are going to be Hall of Famers. I don't know. But they're both exceptional, and you know, you can't have a 16-game fluke. I mean, they are what their tape says they are. And what that tape says they are is they're going to be a problem, as you were saying earlier, in the AFC South for a long time.
Yeah, and at what point, Greg, and obviously none of this is possible if Andrew Luck doesn't return to health this year. And it was, you know, look, as someone, we're in Houston, so we love Andrew Luck down here, just the person, because he's from here. He went to Stratford High School. He's a great kid. And at what point this season, though, did folks like you covering the team realize that the shoulder is okay? This is the Andrew Luck that we saw back in 2014 when he was taking the Colts to the AFC title game.
There were a couple throws in preseason training camp before even the exhibition game started. A couple throws to T.Y. Hilton specifically in the end zone, lasers. Like, okay, well, that's an Andrew Luck throw right there. But still, a lot of us, and I'm high on that list, needed to see it in a game of some sort. I need to see it on a field against somebody else. And the exhibition opener was against the Seattle Seahawks at Seattle. And Luck was, the game was on TV, and Luck was so fired up just to be on the field. And that's been a trend for him all year long. He's so happy to be playing again. I mean, he had a career, not a life, but a career near-death experience over the last 18 months. And he's so happy. He was fired up that night, and he was tremendous. And it was apparent, okay, you're back. And the first three or four games, it was really weird. Well, at the time it looked weird. Now I get it. But they weren't letting Luck throw the ball down the field at all. I mean, it was two steps and unload. His yards per pass attempt were at a career low, like by far. There was one game, I believe it was in Philadelphia, he threw the ball 50 times completed a whole lot of them for about 112 yards. I mean, it was just the dumbest line you've ever seen. And that was the same game where late in the first half, maybe the end of the game, I forget which one it was, they had a Hail Mary, a 48-yard Hail Mary. They brought in Jacoby Brissett just to throw the Hail Mary because they didn't want Luck to throw it. And so at a certain point, it looked like, man, they're babying this guy. Maybe his arm's never going to come all the way back. I don't know. They were just giving him little bites, a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more. The playbook got opened up around week 7, 8, or 9, and now he throws whenever he wants to, and nobody's worried about it. I mean, that arm is all the way back.
And we're talking to Greg Doyle of the Indianapolis Star. Greg, can you describe what it was like covering that two-year period where Andrew Luck was on the shelf and all the news related to Andrew Luck, it was all updates on the shoulder, and there were times, I would imagine, where it was looking pretty bleak. Can you put into words what it was like to cover the team during that time?
Yeah, bizarre. Bizarre is one word for it because it was happening in real time, so it's kind of easier when you have like a 100-mile view of this thing, and certainly in the past, in hindsight, look back and say, wow, that's kind of weird. But in the middle of it, it was just weird. Like, this is still – he's still not throwing football yet? What? He's still throwing a Nerf football? It's been 17, 18 months in surgery, and he's now throwing a Nerf football? What is happening here? And, of course, you heard all the rumors. Rumors were always, you know, he's never going to play again and all this stuff. But the rumors, at some point, they kind of made sense. I mean, no one was writing it because it was just rumors, but it was weird. I mean, it was beyond weird, and the Colts weren't really talking about it because I think a lot of this was – I mean, you guys know Andrew. He's so smart, and he's so zealous and sincere and wants it so hard and wants it so bad. And so his head gets in the way a little bit, or it can, because he just wants it so much, and he wants it so much for all the right reasons. He puts all the pressure of the franchise and my teammates and all that stuff on his back, and it's just too much. And so as he was trying to come back from the shoulder surgery and it wasn't happening and Colts fans are freaking out and the media's wondering what's going on, the last thing the Colts wanted to do is say anything to make Andrew feel more kind of under the spotlight as he already was. That's one of the reasons why he went to Europe to rehab his shoulder. He wanted to get out of here. There was just too much tension on him and his shoulder, and he couldn't take it, and he left.
How big a bullet do people in Indianapolis feel like they dodged by Josh McDaniels not taking that job?
You know, the day he got – people are so funny. The day he got hired, everybody around here – and I'm glad you asked that question. I'm the world's worst human for answering it this way. But the day he got hired, everybody around here loved it. Media loved it. He's a genius. Yada, yada, yada. And I just ripped it. Just couldn't understand it. And of course, he backed out, so it didn't really matter. But I didn't know that. No one knew that. I thought, this guy's going to coach the Colts for the next 5 years, and he's going to hate me, and so be it, because I hate him. And I wrote pretty much, I hate Josh McDaniels. I hate you. I can't believe you're coaching the team in my city. And when he backed out, people were mortified and mad and scared because they thought he was the guy. You know, you believe what you want to believe, right? I mean, when Lane Kiffin was coaching Tennessee, the whole world knew Lane Kiffin was an idiot, except for Vols fans. They thought he was great. So the Colts hired Josh McDaniels, and the whole world knows Josh McDaniels is a little twerp, except for Colts fans and some of the media around here who bought it. It took about 5 minutes of Frank Reich's first press conference, and I'm being dead serious, 5 minutes for us to look around, and the media was doing that, and I'm sure fans were if they were watching on TV or whatever, to look around and say, holy cow, this guy's legit. You just tell. I tell you, when I got here, I got hired in 2014. Mm-hmm. The Colts were in the middle of three straight 11-5 seasons, playoffs. They went to the AFC title game that year. Chuck Pagano was allegedly a good coach. I got here, and after 5 minutes listening to that guy, I knew he doesn't have it. Like, I have no idea how they're winning games, but he's not the reason. You just could tell. And sure, I'm not smart to anybody else, although I'm sure I'm patting myself on the back here a lot. But you just – some things are obvious. But you can't drink the Kool-Aid. And folks drink the Kool-Aid and thought Josh was great. And folks around here drank the Kool-Aid because Chuck was winning. But if you don't drink the Kool-Aid and just pay attention to these people, you can tell who's got it and who doesn't. And Frank Reich, holy cow, does he have it in an incredible way. He's 56 years old, 57 now. It's got a late start because he's been in seminary for several years, but he's going to win a whole lot of games before he's done, however long he lasts.
No doubt about that. Greg Doyle, Indianapolis Star, joining me. Greg, we have a few minutes left. I want to make sure I left at least a few minutes to ask you about Tyler Trent, the young man who lost his life to cancer in the last week or so from Purdue. I For those who didn't know the story, I kind of explained the story in the previous segment. I think most people have seen it by now, whether it's on social media or on ESPN, the Purdue game against Ohio State. The amazing things that have happened with that happened with him during the last couple months of his life, largely driven by just a spirit that he had that I thought you articulated so beautifully in the column that you wrote about him. Can you talk a little bit about your memories of Tyler Trent?
Yeah, what's amazing is, well, so many things are amazing about that, but the fact that you would say, I think probably most people kind of know the story already, and you're talking about a national audience, and you're right. Most people listening probably do know the story already. He wasn't an athlete. He was a homeschooled kid from a small suburb here in Indianapolis, went to Purdue, and really couldn't stay in school very long, so the cancer kept coming after him. But he had cancer, but that kid wasn't dying. That kid was living.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was living. And a few people noticed it and tweeted about it. A few more people noticed it and tweeted about it. And pretty soon the world just couldn't get enough of that kid. I mean, we just couldn't get enough of him. So inspiring and motivational. And for all the right reasons. I mean, he wasn't proud of himself. There was none of that. In fact, he would say over and over that he would call it crazy, the attention he was getting. He was crazy. But he knew that for him, there are tens of thousands of kids his age, pediatric cancer, who don't have that platform at all. And he knew he wasn't fighting for himself. I'll be very blunt here. I went and visited him all the time. He knew how his story was going to end.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't fighting for himself. He was fighting for others who have cancer now and the ones that we hope never get diagnosed in the future because people like Tyler Trent made a difference. He was fighting for all of them. The things that he did and pulled off and showed up at and the way he lived his life are so improbable. I mean, Tyler Trent, in our country's like sports landscape of cancer inspirational sports figures, if we had a Mount Rushmore of that, Jimmy V's on there, Stuart Scott's on there,
yeah.
Tyler Trent's on there.
Yeah,
and that's unbelievable. So what I'm saying is, if you're going to tell me 5 years from now that, hey, guess what? We cured cancer, and guess who did it? Tyler Trent did it. He donated cells of his tumor. It's called the T-squared line here at Riley Children's Hospital. Doctors wanted to see what on earth is going on with your tumor because it was so virulent. It was so violent. So they're studying it. He did that at great physical pain. He donated those tissues.
Mm.
If you tell me that 5 years from now they're going to cure cancer and Tyler did it, I'm telling you right now, of course he did.
Well, Greg, I really appreciate you telling the story the way you did in the Indianapolis Star and sharing that just now. Really, really good stuff, and certainly thoughts and prayers to Tyler and his family from our audience here at CBS Sports Radio. Really appreciate you making time. Before I let you go, in about 30 seconds or less, what do you think the Colts' chances are in Kansas City this coming weekend?
I said on radio shows, anybody asked me, they're going to beat Tennessee 2 weeks ago and get in the playoffs, and they did. And I said they're going to beat Houston, and they did. They're not beating Kansas City.
Okay.
I'm not a homer. They're playing really well. They can beat the teams they beat. They're not beating Kansas City. So I don't know how it ends. I think it'll be a shootout. The Colts defense is really good, but I think KC's going to score a whole lot of points. I think the Colts are going to score a lot of points. You might see a game 40s to 30s.
Take the over is what I just heard you say, I think, is what
oh,
I
yeah.
heard. Okay, there you go. Hey, Greg, appreciate it. Happy New Year. Hope to do it again with you soon, man. Enjoy the rest of this playoff run with the Colts.
Thanks so much, Sean.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.